Welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian. This is Insight number 173. We're recording this on Friday, the 1st of July, 2011. We do have Ewan Spence with us, but he's just off doing an errand. He will join us shortly. In the meantime, I've got Rafe Blanford.
Hello, everybody.
And Rafe's just been to the dentist. He's asked me to do more of the talking because his mouth is still a bit numb.
Yeah, do excuse me if I stumble over the odd word, but yes, just back from the dentist, feeling happy it's all over, shall we say.
Yeah, but we have a few items of news and also some review commentary. We've got the Nokia E6 and X7 in the house, as you know. First three review parts, I think, are up now for the X7, and the first part is up for the E6, and probably the second as well by the time you listen to this podcast on the Monday. But a few items of news. Nokia has announced a raft of updates for many of the S63rd edition, not all the S63rd edition feature pack 2 phones, Rafe, and also most of the S65th edition phones, bringing them the kind of the guts of the new browser that's going to be in Symbian Anna, web version 7.3. And on the S65th edition phones, which is the Nokia C6, C503, 5230, 5235, 5250, X6, N97 mini, 5800 and 5530, and all of those, you'll basically get, Rafe, do I understand right, you actually will look and behave like the browser in Symbian Anna, just without perhaps quite the same performance.
Yeah, that's absolutely spot on. I've actually upgraded the C600, which is one of the handsets that has this available. And yes, you get the full Symbian Anna browser. That's the kind of the new UI with the improvements in UI, which are really about usability. So for example, you've got a drop down address bar at the top of the page, and you can actually swipe down, it'll appear anytime, it doubles as a search box. And rather than that rather fiddly sort of clunky UI at the bottom, where you sort of pressed a sort of arrow button to get the toolbar to appear, or the sort of options and then settings menu, you've actually just got a little shortcut that pops up a grid of icons for the major functionality, and then the settings option is one of the things on there, so tucked away. So much improved in that sense, but also I think it's a big performance boost, and that's partly to do with the rendering engine, although the updates there are relatively minor. There's kind of initial HTML5 support, some CSS3 support, and upgraded JavaScript. But a lot of the extra speed improvement is partly about the UI getting around more quickly and navigating back and forth. I think they're using the cache more intelligently, so when you go back to a page you've already visited, it tends to load quicker. But a lot of it is just, I think, about throughput into the rendering engine. And so, for my money, it actually makes a pretty big difference. I haven't done any direct benchmarking or comparisons, but I think the speed's pretty similar between, you know, the Symbian 1 devices and then the Symbian 3 device running it, which, of course, the only one at the moment is the X7 with Anna and also the E6. So I was actually pretty impressed to see this update come along for the browser. This is a big deal.
Yeah. It should be noted, of course, that the S65th edition phones we just mentioned, they do have the lower RAM and slower processors and no graphics acceleration. So you're not quite getting the same performance. Certainly, I think Symbian Anna, with the optimizations under the hood and the more powerful hardware and this new browser, will be a whole different kettle of fish.
Yes, absolutely. It's worth pointing out that when you get onto the bigger pages, you may have problems. I did a bit of testing and didn't come across anything immediate, but I think where you might get it is if you open multiple windows, which is actually one of the features of the new browser. Before, it was sort of a hidden thing. You could do it, but you couldn't actually specifically open a new browser, kind of the tab-like functionality, if you will. I think if you do that on some of the older devices, especially if you've got lots of applications running in the background, it will then start to fall over. So, I mean, I haven't done sort of a great deal of testing on it, but for the sort of basics, it seemed to be working very well. And of course, this, you know, it's just as good. I mean, I've always said on these Symbian One devices, and actually on mobile devices in general, it's sometimes better to look at the mobile sites. And so, you know, just from that point of view, the UI for the address bar and things like that is better when you're using mobile sites. You might still, as you say, come across issues on the heavier sites where RAM is, you know.
Yeah. I noticed on the navigation, but the back, you know, carousel of pages you visited, the actual icon to add a new window is actually quite small on the page. And I suspect that if you're not a geek, then you probably wouldn't actually notice it, and you wouldn't know that you wanted to open a new window, so you wouldn't run into RAM problems. Whereas a geek would think, okay, I want a new tab, I want a new window. But then again, they're a geek and they understand about RAM and they understand the limitations. So I don't think it'll be a big problem in real life.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment. I mean, if there's going to be memory problems, I think they might actually come from Ovi Maps, which is equally sort of memory hungry as the browser. And actually with these updates, you're getting, I think it's service release 6, so it's Ovi Maps 3.6 or 3.06, depending how you do the versioning. And that's actually might be more of a memory problem on some of the older devices. Certainly I've noticed that Ovi Maps will close down every application in the background if you're doing any significant amount of activity in it. So I suspect that might be one to watch in the browser. I should say that is also part of this raft of updates, which are all coming through firmware updates rather than anything else. There are some available already. If you look on the All About Symbian site for the story here, we've listed the ones that are available, and we're trying to keep track of them as they come along. And there's also this emoticons in SMS and MMS, which for me is a bit pointless, but I know some people like it. It's actually more popular in some parts of the world than others, I understand, particularly out in Asia, for example. So those are kind of the three updates that everything's getting. Then in the firmware updates, you will also see updates to other things. For example, the E72 gets an update to the mail handling to better support for HTML email. We should just say here that the S63rd edition feature pack 2 devices don't get the new UI in the browser, and they get a slightly lower version of Maps. I think it's service release 4 in that case. But still, you know, I think seeing the updates on those older devices is fantastic news. I mean, the oldest of them, I think, is the 5800, which has essentially been on sale now for 2.5 years and has already had quite a series of firmware updates, software updates over the years. And this is a pretty big one. So, you know, Nokia gets lots of criticism for not updating things quickly enough. But to see this update for the browser in particular, I think, you know, really good news. And obviously, I think you put it in the news story, Steve, it does breathe new life into the older phones.
And before carrying on, I just want to mention that Ewan's now back. So hello, Ewan.
Hello. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are, whichever podcast I'm on just now.
He's a bit confused. Also, we have David Gilson on the line. So hello, David, as well.
Yes, hello. I've made it. I'm in a slightly different time zone. I'm about GMT minus 20 minutes.
There we go. So we have a full quorum at last. We're just talking about these browser and maps updates, guys. And we're just going through that list of devices which are being updated by Nokia. There are a few devices notable that are missing, Rafe, aren't there? Now, the N97 Classic is perhaps understandable. That's so low on CDisk space that just installing almost anything causes it to fall over. But things like the N86, the E75, do you think these devices will actually appear with firmware updates, and Nokia just aren't promising them in case someone gets disappointed?
Well, I think that's always a possibility, but what I suspect Nokia did here is looked at the sort of active device population, which of course they'd be seeing from things like Ovi Store and Maps, and chose the ones which were most popular or, you know, had the biggest population, and is updating those, because obviously every time you add another handset to that, it's going to increase the cost of actually doing this. And so although the N86, you know, great handset, I suspect there's probably not all that many out there, simply because it, you know, was a relatively high in cost, and it came in at the time when, you know, the touch devices were first coming in. So I think a lot of people who might have bought the N86 ended up going for, you know, the 5800 or N97, some of those subsequent touch devices. E75, well, that's hard to think about. I mean, I would have thought that would be durable. Part of this on the non-touch devices, at least, is I suspect, although they're all S63rd edition feature pack 2, there is in fact kind of effectively a S63rd edition feature pack 2.2, if you like, sort of an update. And I notice all of the devices fall into that category. The N86 should also fall into that category, but some of the older ones, like the N79, for example, would be a little bit before. So there may be some difference there, which means those ones aren't getting it. But I suspect the main thinking behind it is which are the popular devices, which, if you think about it, makes sense because you get the most number of people happy.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to our next short story before we dive into the main review section. Opera Mini and Opera Mobile have both received big updates. I mean, Opera only actually bump up the version numbers by 0.1, but these are quite substantial. Version 6.1 for Opera Mini, version 11.1 for Opera Mobile. Main changes, well, you've got easy and powerful text selection, they say, and it works really well. A bit like on the iPhone, you tap and hold your finger on the text you want, handles appear, you drag the start and finish handles around, and you can then copy and text, which is still something you still can't do with Symbian Web. So kudos for Opera for implementing this, not only in Opera Mobile, but also in the much smaller, much more efficient Opera Mini. You also get a faster version of Opera Turbo and Opera Mobile. You get a single column view now in both browsers. Makes it easy to read large web pages with many parts on a small screen. So basically, it's kind of like acting out like this special reader mode in Safari on the iPhone, where it just, you know, it strips out everything you don't need and just gives you a nice single column reading mode. And then there is auto address completion for domains, so .com, .org, .net, all get added automatically. So there's lots and lots in these new versions. Do go and grab them. They're both completely free. So just go to Symbian Web, go to m.opera.com, and you'll be shown automatically the right versions for your operating system, in this case Symbian. Just grab it. And highly, highly recommend it. Ewan, did you try these new versions?
I've been keeping an eye on Opera for many, many years now, and I just like it as a browser. There's this massive swing nowadays towards, you know, your mobile browser should show everything like it was the desktop, and I never agreed with that previously, and I still don't agree with it now. What I want is the content quickly, and Opera Turbo is just wonderful at this, you know, squishing it down. I mean, you look at the difference between calling up news.bbc.co.uk on the Symbian browser and the Opera browser, you get the same content, you get the same words, but I can probably navigate the Opera version much faster because it's a mix of their mobile version and it's been scrunched and switched down. They're coding for the environment. Okay, it's a bit of a European environment, as with everything, the American view of the smartphone, which is you have to see everything on the browser screen, kind of rules over Android and iOS, and the European view of, no, just let's have the information, again, is creating this wonderful clash. And it's notable that the Symbian browsers in Anna are swinging towards that try and show everything approach. So Opera is going to be one of those things that I install straight away on the device. And it's one of the few times I have to use a Symbian browser, which is to do m.opera.com and actually get a browser.
Yeah. So highly recommended. Do go and grab them if you're listening out there. They really are worth it. And basically on every single Symbian device I've got the built-in web browser, of course, and I've got both of these two Opera browsers. It's kind of a shame, really. You have to think, now, which one do I use? Do I use Opera Mini or Opera Mobile? Which is most suitable for the website I'm about to go on? But the interface is so similar, it doesn't actually make much difference. And the main thing to decide is what sort of speed bandwidth you've got. If you're on sort of edge, then maybe Opera Mini. If you've got 3G or Wi-Fi, then Opera Mobile. So either way, it works really, really well. Now, we have two main review parts in this podcast I want to get through. There's the two big devices, the E6 and the X7, both very, very different form factors, different feel. I took the first X7 part and then passed it over to Ewan. Rafe has been hogging the E6 all to himself, but I'm going to try and muscle on the act fairly soon, hopefully. Let's start with Ewan, because Rafe is still recovering from his tooth surgery. Now, Ewan, you've had the X7 for 4 or 5 days. I've seen it online for as much as £430. Now, the big, big thing I said in my summary to my review part was that it was great as far as it went with a few caveats, but at that price point, it just makes no sense. Would you agree with that?
Yes, but with a couple of caveats. The first one is list prices are very rarely the price people pay. This is a phone that is going to be sold to networks, Nokia's primary customer. They will decide a price with the monthly subscriptions that's going on. You know, when you look around, you're looking at your smartphones now, typically in the UK, are priced around between £60 and £100 to buy the handset, and then 24 months at about £25 to £35 a month as a sort of baseline. So, you know, it's where will the X7 come in on that sort of scale. That's the interesting one, and that's the one we don't actually know yet. It's going to need to be priced very, very competitively, shall we say. But I don't think it will be.
I just noticed that online, just looking at SIM free prices, you can get it if you shop around for around £330, £340, which is a lot more realistic, but I still think it's got some way to fall. So certainly not by buying it out of contract. It needs to go below 300 for it to really be a recommended
phone. The thing here, Steve, though, is if you had enough people buying out of contract phones, you know, that would A, make this bit of the price comparison chart valid, but you'd also still have the Nokia retail stores probably running as well, because they sold everything off contract and unlocked. So let's see what it's going to be like in the shops.
Yeah.
My problem with this is, look, the X7 looks absolutely wonderful. You know, that absolutely actually, no, maybe not absolutely. Maybe it's quite nice. actually, no, maybe not quite nice. I mean, some of the styling choices they here are just, you know, they've just been weird. I mean, let's face it. You pick it up. You know, I remember seeing the screenshots, the screen caps of this, and thinking, four speakers. That's going to sound wonderful watching Dam Busters or something on the film. And then you get it and you go, no, it's stereo. Only the two speakers at the bottom actually do anything. And then you listen carefully and you find that the sound coming out of the two bottom grills is the same on both sides. That to me is mono. Even though the specs say stereo, and the speakers are so close together and the sound is shared, essentially this is a mono device. When you're watching a video, it's like watching something on a 12-inch black and white Sanyo portable from 1979 that lives in the kitchen. It's just at every point where you think something nice might happen or something weird might happen, something weird happens. Rafe, just remind me of my numbers and stuff correctly. This was the phone that AT&T were looking at the start of the year, wasn't it?
That's right, or at least allegedly. I think it's a pretty widely known secret that essentially AT&T looked at Nokia, looked at it and said, this isn't going to do anything for our US market presence. Let's not do it.
That phrase applies, but let's just take the word US out of it. This phone is not going to do anything for our market presence. It's, you know, it's not surprising now to me that allegedly AT&T looked at this phone and went, you know what? We'll pass. You know, this is not an N8. This is not a C7. This is not a C6. This isn't even a 5230. The X7 just feels like... Right, look, there's a great example for this. Steve, you know what the X1 was, don't you? The first plane to be the sound barrier. Yep.
Oh, go on then.
Right. The X2, you know what the X2 was? First plane to break Mark 2. X15, first plane to break Mark 5, hypersonic, and was allegedly America's first spaceship, getting above 50 miles.
Yep. Things you learn on this podcast.
Okay, so here's one. Those are the ones that I would expect people to at least have a sort of semblance of recognition. The X7 test plane was an unmanned test bed for ramjet and missile guidance technology, which was very nice, which was very cute, but really didn't do much. It just kind of went up and stopped, and then a parachute brought it down to earth like Wile E. Coyote in the Roadrunner things. You learnt a couple of things from it, but it wasn't the sort of headline, wow, that the X1 and the X15 and arguably the X20 would have done as well. You know, so I kind of joked a couple of podcasts back that the X7... Oh, are we just mistaking that for one of the X-planes in America's for a plane that didn't do very much? I wasn't mistaken. The Nokia X7 is as useful and as much reputation and goodwill as the Lockheed X7.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing that really impressed me about the X7, which is why I think it has got possibilities, is the screen is genuinely lovely. It's not as good as the E7 screen, but it's not far off. And it's presumably cheaper to make, presumably the CBD on the E7.
I'm not so sure on that. I mean, we've had sun in Scotland for the last 2 days, you know, knock me down with a feather and wake me up with a haggis. But it's out of the Symbian hat three handsets, this is the worst one in sunlight for me.
It's the worst one?
Yeah.
Okay. You think it's worse than the N8s?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, the sun just appeared in Reading, so I shall go out and do some testing later on.
Can I have it back?
But the X7's main strength really is in displaying media, you know, apart from the usual smartphone duties. It's actually, you know, playing videos and playing music over headphones, to be fair. And certainly I've loaded up a number of sort of high def videos, and it plays them gorgeously. And if you're watching videos, you're watching them indoors, so you're not too worried about sunlight visibility. And for that use case alone, and maybe playing, you know, Symbian 3 games, it really is a stonking handset. I just think that it's a lot of money to pay for that when you can do most of those same things on the other Symbian phones, maybe not quite as well, but with extra functions and extra without so many compromises. I agree with you. The X7 is kind of something that this is never really going to take off, certainly at not this price point, certainly marketed as it currently is.
I just think there's too many compromises in this device. I'm struggling to think of a use case where I would recommend it, Steve. And high def video, you know what, there's not a lot of difference when you're holding it at hand's length between the screen on the E7 or even the N8. Yes, it's a slightly bigger inch diameter, but it's uncomfortable to hold. The sound quality for going out through speakers isn't great. The C601 is still a louder phone. Yeah, in terms of speaker playback, if somebody says, "Oh, let's watch high def video," you know, well, it's only 640 pixels. Just, you know, you're not going to, you're squishing this everything down by half anyway from the file size from the 720p video, and I just think that, you know, if your raison d'etre is to watch HD video on the move, save your money and get a PlayStation Vita, because it's going to be a far better screen. You know, if you want to watch high def video and do other stuff, then the N8, yes, you know, the C7 is probably a better choice than the X7. Throw me some use cases and please prove me wrong, but I'm not very gung-ho on this phone, and I find that unusual and disheartening at the same time, because I really liked it.
I think the moment you started up playing music and you found that the speakers weren't a patch on the X6s, I think that's the moment when you instantly fell out of love with the possibility of loving it, as it were. I think if the X7 had had two really good speakers, I think that might well have saved it and made it a really good music and media phone. But the fact that it can't do music very well rather chops at its legs from under it.
That's fair comment, I think. Rafe?
Yeah, I think this is a really interesting discussion because, I mean, I've got X7 here as well. I think the four speaker grill things is a bit of a interesting one. I mean, it is what it is. It's a design decision. And yes, it would have been nice to have four speakers, but I mean, actually, I think quadraphonic on a mobile device seems a bit pointless. I mean, I even think stereo on a mobile's are really a bit pointless given the distance between them. Because if you want any kind of quality on any mobile device, you are going to be plugging into speakers or a headset. But leaving that aside, I mean, I do agree that the X7, for me personally, doesn't stand out as a device. And I think you can apply that more generally as well. But on the other hand, I think what Steve was saying about, you know, the big screen and kind of the bigger side of the device, and to that I'd actually add the style of it and the feel in the hand. It is, you know, slimmer than the N8. It does feel a bit more stylish than the other Symbian 3 devices. Are two things that make it stand apart from the rest. And what it is therefore for me is another one in the Symbian 3 range that is sufficiently different that people who want those kind of characteristics can choose to have it. And so it underlines what Nokia have done across the whole Symbian 3 range, and I think we'll see this again with the E6 in a minute, is provide different options so people can choose what they want. I think it is fair to say the X7 isn't necessarily going to be the first choice of many. I mean, in terms of the high-end one, I think people would still be recommending the N8 because of its camera. I would personally recommend on the touch devices something like the C7 because I think it provides one of the best combinations of value for money and size and that kind of thing. The C601 is a good kind of the budget option, and obviously the E7 for the port, the QWERTY and the clamshell kind of design, if you like, and the E6 will again add another option there. So for me, it's more about choice, and I think part of the problem with discussing the X7 here is none of us are really quite in the target market or are the people who would choose this particular device. Will others? That's difficult to say, and you know, it comes at something of a disadvantage coming out of a period where, you know, Symbian has been heavily criticised and everyone seems to be moving on already. And so in one sense, I do wonder if the X7 had come out, you know, at the same time as the rest of the devices, it might have had a slightly different conversation.
Yeah. I'm really not sure on that one. I mean, let's take that speaker grill and thing first. Someone looks at this in the shop, they see four speakers. Okay, tech specs and design stuff and everything, they pick up this phone to buy, and let's face it, this is fashion-led phone, not spec-led phone. They're expecting four speakers, they don't get it. And I think that right there is going to be a major problem for the X7 in the stores. And at the same time, you know, we've always talked about Nokia delivering lots of options and lots of decisions. But at the same time, when we had the C6, the C7, the N8, and then the E7 came in, you know, it was clear what the choices were. You know, there was nice, this phone's for this, this phone's for this, this phone's for this. We've bringing the E6 in, which I believe we're coming to in a second, you know, it's clear because of the design of that phone where it's gunning for, and it doesn't swamp any of the other options. The X7, it just feels like, well, why are you here? Who invited you? What earthly good do you have in this party? I mean, everything is done slightly better on another one of the handsets. Mm. I mean, you can understand with the, you know, I know a lot of people looked at the E7 and went, can we have decent camera like the N8 has? You know, but I can see why the E7 had the focus there. It did something better than the other phones. I don't see where the X7 does anything better than any of the other phones. Yeah.
Well, I would, as I said before, I would pick out screen and I'd pick out design as the two distinguishing features.
You see, but if you ask me to pick out design, I'll choose a C601 every time because it feels like somebody sat with it in their hand for 3 months and made sure everything works. Whoever's hand was holding the X7, I don't know. Maybe his Abu Hams has been hired by Nokia, but it just doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, design obviously is a subjective thing, but I think in terms of, you know, putting it against, you know, some of the other leading device in terms of thinness and the materials used, I do think the X7 is something different to the other devices. And the C601, I agree with you, it's a nice design and it's nice choice of materials, but it is a lower cost device and you feel that in the materials and when you're holding it in your hand. So, but albeit its design is very subjective.
Yeah, I think we can probably summarise the X7 review, certainly from Ewan and myself, in one word. I would say that I could review it as meh. Thank you, Ewan, for the sound effect. David, you wanted to comment here?
Yeah, well, I haven't had my hands on with an X7, so I am
whenever you want.
So I am purely going by what's on paper, but I mean, let's just look at the screen size. It does seem really as if Nokia are just trying to tick the boxes in my view, because the reasons you want such a large screen on a phone are either because you want to have a really good personal media player, and in which case you really need a lower price because there are better things out there. Yeah. And the other reason you would want such a big screen is to have a device that you kind of use as a tablet as well, and I'm kind of like looking towards like the big Android superphones here, so like the SGS2 and the Dell Streak. But the thing is, we all know very well that Symbian doesn't work like that. Symbian isn't a tablet-like operating system. So in that sense, the X7 doesn't need such a big screen, and the big screen is the big thing that it's got going for it.
Yeah, and which doesn't work in Edinburgh sun apparently. So. I actually thought the X7 screen was pretty good, pretty decent. I thought it was better than the N8 screen from my own testing, although I will do some more tests, but not as good as the E7s. And it's clear that Nokia have done some work in bringing up the display closer to the glass, and that does have a positive effect. But yes, I think we're all struggling to find something that's really remarkable about the X7 other than its styling and its positioning, which I guess is where Rafe is coming from. Can we move on, Rafe, to talking of differentiation and devices carving out their own unique point in the range, to the E6, which you've now had for the best part of a week, if not 2 weeks. And if I can understand your text right, you really, really have fallen in love with this device.
Yes, no, I really like this device. As I was writing the review, I was thinking I have to try and put some objectivity into this, and you know, actually let's take away from my personal stance, say what will people think of this genuinely. But there is I think there's an important point to make here about the E6 for people who are after, you know, one of the big touch tabs. The E6 isn't going to be of much interest. This is for people who are interested in having this form factor which combines the QWERTY keyboard and the touch screen, because obviously by putting the QWERTY keyboard on, you suddenly have a much smaller touch screen, and that does obviously have implications for when you're viewing stuff on it, you know, be it videos or web browsing. But if you want the QWERTY keyboard, you know, this is the device to get if you're not going for the sort of the E7, which is I think a size above, and also, you know, that's a QWERTY keyboard that you kind of get out and use when you want to use it, and the rest of the time you do use it kind of in the touch slab format. Whereas the E6, it's QWERTY keyboard all the time. And one of the things I really liked about the E6 was actually there's an ability to use it without really using the touchscreen at all. The one exception to that is obviously there's no longer hardware buttons for the soft keys on this device. They're on the screen. But actually, because of the positioning of them on the screen, which is at the bottom, and the Vibra haptic feedback, it actually feels like you've got buttons there anyway. So when I say, you know, not using the touchscreen, I mean not using it to navigate around lists or applications. And you can actually use the D-pad and those two soft keys at the bottom to do the majority. There are some applications where that's not true. I think OviStore is one of them. I think Nokia Social can be like that as well. But the standard applications, in other words, the one that have slightly longer heritage that goes back to the non-touch S60 third edition days, you know, do work. And, you know, Symbian's often criticised for having this legacy heritage, but ironically, on the E6, it does wonders because it creates a very, very good hybrid device. And I think we've seen quite a lot of Android and indeed other platform devices try and add touch on and do non-touch devices, and it hasn't always worked very well. Whereas with Symbian, I think it's done, you know, very well indeed, and in some ways it's taking the best advantage of some of Symbian's characteristics, the E6. And so, yes, I very much like it. Looking at the sort of the hardware side of things, it's difficult to pick out things that I would criticise about it. There are the obvious ones like the EDOF camera, but that's a debate that will run and run. And I think people need to be aware of that when they're buying it. But I, from my personal point of view, I don't have a problem with that. The other one, I guess, that people would talk about would be the size of the screen, and that's really down to how big you want the device to be. And Nokia have said sub 60 millimeters in width, because that way it becomes usable one-handed, and I absolutely agree with that. And then I suppose it's the processor and the RAM, which is the old chestnut with Symbian, and I don't really think there's a major performance issue on the E6, which makes me go, I wish it had a much faster processor. And certainly the...
Can I ask you, Rafe, about the, you mentioned the screen there, have you missed having a larger screen? Because obviously you've had the E7, you've had the N8, you've had the X7, and you've used all of these devices for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or more, and now you're down to a 2.4-inch screen all of a sudden. How has that felt like a come down? Have you actually missed that?
Yes, it has to an extent. I mean, I think the thing about screens is when they're in your pocket, you want them to be small. When you get them out, you want them to be as big as possible. And yes, you know, I will admit, having been switching back and forth between the two, you know, I do miss the bigger screen when I'm doing things like web browsing, but it's a sacrifice that I'm willing to make. So it's not good having the small screen, but the utility of the keyboard, in particular when you're doing messaging, and it's email for me is the big one, makes it worthwhile. But I don't think it's worth pretending that it's better having a smaller screen. It's not. What I will say about the E6's screen is that it's a high resolution. It's actually a VGA screen, 600 by 480. So it's actually higher resolution than the sort of N8, C7, etc. And so you're getting the same amount of information on it. It is sort of physically quite a bit smaller, but because it's got that high resolution and small physical size, the pixel density is very high. It's actually even more than the iPhone 4, so this is a retina display, if you like. You get 326 pixels per inch, which basically means if it's more than about 10 inches away from your eye, you can't distinguish the individual pixels. That means it's a very sharp and very clear screen, and it makes things easy to read despite it being physically small. And so, you know, it is obviously an inherent compromise with this kind of form factor, and which is why I say people who want this device will already kind of know about that, will have taken that on board, and it won't be a factor in their purchasing decision. I think anyone else looking at it in the shop where they're not quite sure, they're probably going to be more naturally drawn to the bigger screen, you know, the 3.5 inches and above, because, you know, they do look more attractive when they're sitting on the shop shelf. But if you want the keyboard in this form factor, you know, you basically have to take the choice there. And in that sense, I find the E6 hardware very hard to criticise. You know, build quality is very good. You know, for example, over the E72, they've added the Slager lock key, which I very much like for locking and unlocking the device. No fiddly key combination there.
Missing from the X7, wick, wick, nudge, nudge, hint, hint, Nokia.
Indeed. And then, you know, you've got decent quality on the volume keys. That's good. You've got the mute key for if you're doing a lot of conference calling, which is very useful. And actually, there's a mute LED on there as well. You've got the micro USB port. You've actually got 8 gigabytes of internal mass memory plus a micro SD card. It's not so kind of the best of both worlds there. You've got both the 2mm charger and the USB charging, hint, hint, X7.
Hooray!
So, you know, there's precious little to criticize. One thing that's maybe a criticism on the white version of the E6, the notification light isn't as strong as it could be, so in daylight it's difficult to see. I have to admit, I personally don't really use it much during the day. At night time, you know, I will look over and glance it to see if something's come in, and the notification light doesn't work for email, so there's some criticism of the hardware there. But yes, the best thing about the E6 is its battery. It's removable, woohoo, but it's also 1500 milliamp hours in terms of the capacity.
And it's lithium polymer as well.
It is. And so that combined with Symbian 3, which we already know is quite power frugal, as we've seen from, you know, the N8 and C7, etc., means the battery life on this is almost unbelievable for a modern smartphone. Even with, you know, push email going and Nokia Station in the background, it's comfortably lasting me 2 days. And I suspect it would go 3 days with sort of light usage. Under, you know, very heavy usage conditions, you'll get a day out of it comfortably. And that's, you know, using the screen for maybe 3 or 4 hours, doing an hour of web browsing, bit of music listening, you know, maybe 20, 30 minutes of calls, text messages, email, etc. You know, I took it into London the other day, and I was, you know, using quite a lot, doing a bit of navigation and then sitting for an hour on the train, basically playing with the phone. And it did, you know, it did really well. And so that is something which, for me personally, battery life is a bit of a personal bugbear, which you may have found out if you've listened to the recent 361 Degrees podcast. Plug, plug, plug.
I recognise the same twittering in the background. But
yes, that's right. There's the bird song has started up again. So for me, this battery life thing is probably the single most attractive thing about this device. That is a personal judgment. I find it important for me because it's, you know, you don't have to remember to plug it in every 5 minutes. And I guess that's an exaggeration in one sense, but, you know, I do hanker for the time where, you know, mobile devices did last over a day without any problem. And so, you know, choosing all of those things about the E6 does make the hardware really stand out for me. The software, there's some issues to talk about, but I guess there's probably a couple of questions I know that David's got, because I know he's very keen to get his hands on this device as well.
Yeah, David.
Yes, I really am, because last year the E72 was my Nokia world phone. It was the only it's the only thing I would trust to be my workhorse, and it was the only thing that did really keep going well. What I was just thinking about is that I've been thinking about a few things, but Steve and I have had a telepathic link, and he's done a lot of the asking for me.
It worked.
Yes, but the thing I did want to ask is that whenever we talk about phones or whatever, and there's like a successor model, and we say, right, well, these are the reasons to upgrade if you've got the old model. Now, for people who've got, I won't say an E71, because that is a little too old, but people who have got an E72 and are very happy, what would you say are the reasons for them to not upgrade to the E6?
Well, I think the one thing you'd have to pick out probably is favourite apps. We've moved from S63rd edition Featureback 2 to Symbian 3, going from non-touch to touch. But also the E6 has an unusual screen resolution, and that means that the number of apps available for it are relatively limited compared to what you've got for Symbian 3. A lot of the big names are there, but some of them aren't. And obviously it's early on the device, so that does sometimes happen, particularly with OviStore, where developers have to specifically mark it as being compatible. But I do think this is an issue that's going to go throughout the lifetime of the E6. And actually the same thing to a certain extent happened with the E71. You know, the E72 benefited from being the second device. And so I guess apps would be the big thing for me there. And then I guess picking out a second thing, it's actually related, it's games. The games which, on the business device, you might go, they shouldn't be playing games. Well, fair enough, but no, we're used to having dual-use devices, both personal and work, and games are even poorer than the app situation, and that's because games are typically written for, you know, a specific resolution. So none of the big Symbian 3 games that you get on the N8 and the other devices work, you know, most notably the games which are termed HD. So that's disappointing. So no Angry Birds, no Fruit Ninja, none of the racing games.
Can you imagine playing Angry Birds on a 2.4-inch screen there, Rafe? I mean, even if it was actually working and sized correctly, that would drive you blind, surely.
Well, I would have thought so, but, you know, it's something I think we should highlight, because it is going to be a factor for some people. If I had to pick out any other issues, well, I guess it's the fact, you know, you have to buy a new device and it does cost money. And I suppose the only other thing would be the camera. If you do a lot of business card scanning, that doesn't really work on the E6. There's no business card scanning application. There's multi-scanner on the E72 and I think the E71 as well. But I will say that, you know, if you're using it just as a kind of aide mémoire, i.e. you're taking a picture of a business card or a receipt so you can remember it, the E6 is fine. You just have to hold it a bit further away. And Steve's actually written an in-depth article on this, which we're trying to link to in the show notes. But I think those were the two big things I'd pick out. Everything else, you know, gets a spec upgrade. And in particular, I think the performance in terms of the speed of email, the speed of just navigating around the UI is a big difference. I mean, we've already seen that with people going from Symbian 1 to Symbian 3, and I think it's almost more pronounced going from a 63rd edition to Symbian 3. And so I think there are a lot of reasons to upgrade from an E71, E72 to the E6, far more so than there ever were from the E71 to the E72.
Compared to the E72 as well, would you say you actually lose any battery life, given that you're using the same battery, but you're using a higher performance system? I mean, would you say it's noticeable?
I haven't really used it for long enough to make an absolute comparison, but I'd say, if anything, it's longer, and that's basically down to the fact they've, you know, chosen components carefully, and you're using Symbian 3. If you look at the quoted battery manufacturer lifetimes, which we know don't always bear much relation to reality, the E6 is about 30% higher than the E72, and that would fit in with my experience so far. You know, I would find the E72 would do 2 days just about. I would say the E6 is doing 2 days and having a bit to spare. 30%, I wouldn't necessarily go that far, but if anything, I'd say the power performance of the E6 is even better than that of the E72.
Right, well, I think you can expect a visit at your house from me. I think I'm coming for it.
But as I say, hardware great, but there are some caveats with the software, which we'll cover in the review parts to come, and I'll try and persuade Steve to let me waffle some more in the next podcast.
Well, one final very quick question, Rafe, and this is a bugbear of mine, is that the E6 comes in three colours, which I think is something like white and silver and black, if I'm right. And you've got the white one. Now, white Nokias always bugged me in that the backlight on the keys meant that if you were in sort of indeterminate light conditions, the backlight had kind of cancelled out the key legend, and you couldn't actually see what each key did. Is that a problem on the E6?
I think it probably is the same extent you get it on the other device. So yes, it can be a bit of a problem. Probably why I'd personally choose a black device, but I've got the white one here, and I wouldn't say it's quite as bad as some of the other devices, because they do have better control on the keyboard illumination, in that when you're in that kind of dusky conditions that you're describing, the actual illumination is at its brightest, and it therefore does work quite well. And then when it gets very dark, actually the illumination is turned down. Obviously that's a power efficiency thing, but it does help a little bit to get around that issue. But yes, inevitably there is still this thing that if you light up a white keyboard with a white illumination, the keys can fade in a bit. I would say in particular it's a problem in the middle of the keyboard, on the outer edges maybe less so.
Yeah, the black one, certainly from the photos I've seen, the black one looks the best and certainly will have the best legibility. And if I had to buy any E6 right now, my finger will be hovering over the buy button on the black version, certainly. So hopefully Nokia can send one of those across and we can do some side-by-side testing. And we're almost out of time, guys. So any last words from Ewan before you say goodbye?
Yes, well, that's why BlackBerry is such a big company and WhiteBerry isn't on the smartphone map at all.
Moment of insight there from Mr. Spence. I think we better say goodbye. Do you want to say goodbye with your Twitter handles, guys, starting in Hull?
It's David Gilson. Just spell it as you say it.
Yeah, and in Sussex?
At Rafe Bladford.
And up in Scotland?
It's ESC Insight.
Sneaky plug for the Eurovision. Shouldn't you be plugging your Edinburgh Fringe podcast at this point? At Edinburgh Fringe Twitter handle?
I think you just have.
I thought ESC Insight was the Eurovision Song Contest.
Yes, but now I've got both things mentioned on the podcast and I only had to say one of them.
Or you can just use Ewan at EWAN.
Three things mentioned.
I'm Steve Litchfield, also at AAS on Twitter. Don't forget all about Symbian.com. Thank you very much for listening. We'll catch you next time.